Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and thank you for joining me for another episode of the Growing Up Chaotic Show, the show that provides a 360-degree view on all topics related to addiction, recovery, domestic violence, and mental illness. I am your host, Dawn Clancy. It was on a cold January day after downing 3 beers, 2 shots of Southern Comfort, and a glass of white Zinfandel that Amy Baumgardner got behind the wheel with 2 of her children in the back seat and crashed her car, nearly killing her 5-year-old daughter, Madison. Today, Amy is here with us to share her amazing story, both of addiction and recovery. We're going to be talking about guilt and shame that goes along with addiction and what that was like in recovery. And really what this is about is how she made her way back from rock bottom. The story is incredible. And to have Amy with us here today, and she shares so candidly about what she's been through, is just, it's a treat. I feel honored. So let's welcome Amy to the show. How are you, Amy?
Hi, Dawn. Thanks for having me. I'm doing well.
Of course, of course. It's a pleasure to have you. So what I wanted to do is start with that day in January, and have you tell us kind of what happened leading up to that point that you got in the car with your kids.
Well, you know, January 10th of 2010 was just really the culmination of a number of things leading up to that. I refused to recognize that I was an alcoholic, and I refused to accept the fact that I was using alcohol and drugs to kind of veer away from all the ugly truths about my past, about my childhood, about situations that I've been through, about my marriage going in, my husband and I going in 2 different directions. I didn't know how to deal and cope, and the best thing that helped and always helped was to use alcohol. So January 10th, 2010 was the final point of my rock bottom. It was a turning point for sure, but it definitely, if you read the book, wasn't my absolute rock. There's rock bottom and then there's rock bottom. So I mm-hmm. always talk about, you know, the accident was my rock bottom, but really the guilt and the shame that I had for causing the accident was the real rock bottom for me. My drinking starts like anybody else's drinking. I liked my beer and I liked my wine and I liked my shots, and it was a great time and it was a party until I started using alcohol to substitute. And I would substitute having those hard conversations or dealing with those uncomfortable situations and feelings. If I wanted to check myself out and not deal, then I didn't. And I started using alcohol. And the more I used it, the more I relied on it. And the more I relied on it, the more dependent I became on it. And it was a vicious cycle. And I had no idea that I was doing it. I thought I was just enjoying a couple beers like I always did. But the blackouts were becoming fewer and further in between. And the compulsion to drink just absolutely took over me until January 10th, 2010, where there was just no denying that I absolutely had a problem.
Right. So on the 10th, you get a call to take your kids ice skating. At the time, you had 2, just 2,
yeah.
And you take them ice skating, and you really didn't want to, but you wanted to get them out of the house, so you get in your car, and what happens on your way to the rink?
My husband and I had gotten into what felt like our millionth fight over nothing in particular. And my mother had called, and she'd gotten the kids ice skates for Christmas. And she said, hey, let's go, come on, let's get the kids out of the house. Let's take them. Your brother's going, your niece and nephew are going. Come on, let's just go. So reluctantly, because I wanted to sit and drink in my house, I wanted to go up in my bedroom, shut myself off, you know, poor me. My marriage sucks. Poor me. You know, my career sucks. Poor me. I've gained 40 pounds. I just wanted to to just shut myself off. So reluctantly I went, but on the way I stopped at a local beer distributor and I got some little airplane bottles of whiskey, which it became my norm to have them in my pockets or my bag somewhere. And I got a little 4-pack of the Sutter Home White Zinfandels, and then I got a 6-pack of Coors Light. And before I even left the park, kids in the car, before I even left the parking lot, I downed a beer. And when I got to the ice skating rink and I got them settled in their skates, I would go to the bathroom and drink down one of my little airplane bottles. I did that twice. I went out to the car to, you know, quote unquote, check my phone, and down a white Zinfandel bottle there. You know, and really, I was going out to check my phone to see if Matt called, and then when Matt didn't call, I was expecting him to call me and profess this. Oh, God, I'm so sorry. I got into a fight and I upset you. My ego was saying to me, no, you know what? He should be calling you because there's nothing wrong with you. There's nothing wrong with him. So when he wasn't calling, my ego was telling me then, well, just have another drink. You know, just do what you do. Have another drink. My addiction was calling my name, saying, well, just come over here. Just, you know, it was enticing me. It was, addiction is very seductive. And it was just, oh, I'll make you forget. Oh, just open me. Just drink me. Don't worry.
Right.
It's so true. So on the way home, I was also prescribed Klonopin. I was having these horrible anxiety attacks. And I never had anxiety before, but I was having these terrible anxiety attacks. So I had taken 2 or 3 Klonopin throughout the course of the morning and afternoon. And on the way home, I blacked out behind the wheel. And I came to just when I heard my son yell, Mommy! I felt myself come to. And here's where I say there's rock bottom and there's real rock bottom.
Right.
Because I heard him say, Mommy, it brought me back into consciousness. Although, as cloudy as it may have been, I was aware now that I'm in the car and something's happening. And I chose to rip the steering wheel left anyway.
Right.
So that is where my guilt came in. Yes, I was guilty that I had the accident. Yes, I was guilty that I was ignoring the fact that I had a drinking problem. Now I'm guilty that, and wrestling with as a mother, as a human being, really. I mean, let's break it down even further than that. Just as a human being, because I think as mothers, guilt's hardwired into us regardless. I had to wrestle with the fact that, but I heard him say, Mommy, and then I jerked the wheel anyway. And that's how selfish my addiction took me. I wanted to die. I hated my life. I hated living it. And I didn't care that my two innocent souls were in the back seat. Now, my daughter, Gavin, walked away from the accident fine. We hit a tree going about 60 miles an hour. Madison suffered a level 4 lacerated liver, and she was sent to the A.I. DuPont Children's Hospital in Delaware, and she was in the intensive care unit for 2 weeks. And they didn't know if she was going to live the first week. And they put me in a holding cell, and the state trooper said to me, we're going to charge you with vehicular homicide when your daughter died. I didn't get to see, talk, or for the first 2 days, anybody, except my parents, my mother and my father, and the state trooper. Even my own husband. I mean, we were having our problems, but this was like the icing on the cake for him, too. He was like, how do I forgive? How do we move past here?
Because this wasn't the first time that you had actually gotten into your car and drove with your kids in it, and you were drinking.
No, not at all. Countless times. I think every addict listening can attest to that. How many times have you driven drunk? Countless. This particular time, this was the wake-up call, and this was the divine intervention of my journey and my story, is that everybody survived. Mm. Because how many stories do you hear about drunk drivers killing themselves, killing someone else? Or I mean, Madison was severely injured, but she survived. We all managed to survive that. So it's almost a call to action when you go through something that traumatic at your own hand. It was in my own hand. I caused it. I did it. And when I've gone through something that traumatic, it is a call to action. It is my duty as an alcoholic to share my story and hold my hand up and say, hey, look, I'm not fine. There's nothing fine about me. This is what I did. I'm guilty. I'm dealing with it. I am sorry. And the only way that I can truly show that I'm sorry is to be sober. And I always say living sober is the best amends that you can ever make. Ever. So I made a decision. So I went to rehab, and I made the decision in rehab that I was going to try. I had to be willing to at least try to do this. I had no idea how the hell I was going to stay sober. I had no idea what that even looked like, what that took. I mean, it seemed like this impossible mountain in front of me, and I have no road, no stairs. You know, there's no way around it. What am I going to do? Everybody has felt this way. He suffers from addiction. We all have suffered and felt the same exact way. And the only thing I could think to do was make a plan. And my plan was just for today.
Right.
So when I got out of rehab, I was home, and Madison is home. Now she's moved from, you know, the intensive care unit, and her liver is starting to mend. You know, thank God it's a self-healing organ. And she's on bed rest for 2 months. Bed rest. Tell that to a five-year-old that she can't
right.
get up. You know? So now I'm home after 21 days, and there's my mistake, laying there, helpless. I'm her mother. I put her there. And then the flashback of my son's voice, Mommy, Mommy, that fear, that shriek in his voice, and me turning the wheel. Anyway. All that guilt starts to just flood me. That was the real rock bottom. So
Wow. Wow. It
all just became too much one day. My husband came home. This is about 8 days after rehab, and he says, I went to a divorce lawyer, and I need you to sign this. This just gives me full custody of the kids, and you could just grab whatever you need and go. Very nonchalant, I'm done. And then he walked out, then he left. And I remember, and I'm sitting there, and I'm thinking, how did I get here? Like, what am I going to do? How did I get here in this place? This is not my life. It felt like a bad dream that I could not wake up from. I was replaying the old tapes in my mind, and was it when I drank too much at that wedding? Is that when I became an alcoholic? Was it in college when I refused to deal with the rape and all the emotions that came with that, when I just threw that on the back burner? Was that when I became an alcoholic? Was it my father who's an alcoholic? Did heredity play a part in this? Was that when I became an alcoholic? Like, I just couldn't grasp how my life ended up where it was. And I remembered that I had hit a bottle of Captain Morgan's in the dining room months prior. And I went, and in the cabinet, in the way back, there it was. And without a moment's pause, I just unscrewed the cap, breathed it all in. I was like, yep, hello, lover, you know, just like I was coming home. And I just downed it. And
I had relapsed
8 days later.
Okay.
Yeah, because of the guilt. I didn't know how to process it. I didn't know what to do with it. All I knew is, like, I was a shitty person. That's how I felt. And I didn't know. I'm used to deflecting and ignoring and compartmentalizing all my emotions. That's what I'm used to. That's what I've done. I'm good at it. like it works. Now that's not working. So when that started not working, okay, well, at least I had alcohol. At least the booze could help me out of these icky situations where I didn't want to feel anything, I just wanted to check out. Now, you know, my reality is telling me that, no, you can't use booze anymore. All right, well, what am I going to use? What's left? My marriage is crap. I'm a lousy mother. Look what I just did. Like, now I can't even drink now? Like, really? Like, this is never going to work. That's just how I felt. So I remember there was about half a bottle left, and I just drank it all straight down.
Oh, my God.
And then
how did you not get sick?
About a half hour later, like, obviously, it's kicking in. And I look over, and there's Madison. So then now the guilt of what I just did. Here is my 5-year-old daughter injured critically. She's home now, and she's looking at me, and she's has just these eyes like, what's happening? And I can't even not drink after what I just done. Like, wow, that's a problem. I felt so guilty that I was like, that's it. My children are better off without me. This world is better off without Amy Baumgardner in it. So I drove over to my sister-in-law's house, and I went into her bathroom, and I took every pill that was in her medicine cabinet, every single one.
Wow.
She called my husband, Matt. Matt came, and I could hear him outside the door. It was, the pounding on the door was very, it was in slow motion and echoey, just like a movie, you would think. Mm-hmm. That's how it felt for me, and I couldn't focus on anything. So I got the door open, and he sees all the empty pill bottles, aspirin, antibiotics that my nephew was taking. He had a disorder that he needed medications for. I took that. I took a whole bottle of the rest of the bottle of my Klonopins. I took all of that. I took Tylenol PMs. I took a whole bottle, not a whole bottle, whatever was left in the bottle there. And I remember Matt looking at me and just disgusted. And he walks down the stairs, and he was like, let her die. As he walks down the stairs, collects my children, because I had brought them with me, and he looked at my sister-in-law, and I said, let her die. She's your problem. And he walks out the door. So it was then. That was the real rock bottom. The accident happened, and thankfully, I survived. You know, Madison survived, Gavin survived. I didn't hit anybody else. Then the guilt took over. And then what really drove the point home for me that I had a serious, serious problem with alcohol is when I couldn't even give it up. 8 days after leaving a drug and alcohol rehabilitation facility for a car accident that got me in there, a drunk driving accident that got me in there.
Right. Right.
I just started connecting the dots, and I was like, this can't be my life. So the will for me came from wanting and needing for that not to be the end of my story. Otherwise, what was all of it for?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I'm a firm believer in experiences, and actually, I actually chaired a meeting this past Thursday to get my 5-year coin. It's a little late, but snow and whatnot around here stopped me from going. And I was leafing through the big book, and on page, I think it's 124, there is a remark made by Henry Ford, and he says something to the effect of, experiences are the thing of supreme value. And I thought, as I read that, every time I leaf through that book, I just pick a page and something jumps out at me. And I went, huh, isn't that interesting? Experiences are the thing of supreme value. And how true is that? Because all of my past experiences, I learned nothing. accept, to ignore, and deflect. And this time, the experience that I had with my drunk driving accident and hitting, you know, the rock bottom and then the real rock bottom. In my book, it says that. The chapter is the rock bottom and then the real rock bottom.
Mm-hmm.
Those experiences are what I value, and are, and what I've learned and taken from them is what I value. And I really feel fortunate that I've had them. Otherwise, I wouldn't be the person that I am today. I couldn't be the mother that I am today and the wife that I am today. So that's
wow.
kind of that day, where that came from.
Right. No, you know, it's true. There's an author, her name's Joy Narjo, and she talks about the same thing, how the experiences in our lives become our palette that we have.
Yeah.
And we use that palette to create our lives, and how, you know, if you don't use it, then you can let it destroy you. But, of course, in your case, you didn't. I mean, you almost were there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I've been there. I've been to that dark, dark, dark corner of my soul that just gives up. I gave up.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't, and it was just, I had a little piece of hope tucked in my heart somewhere that I just held on to, that hope. That's why hope, faith, and forgiveness is the three things my husband Matt and I say saved our marriage, saved my life. Is I just kept on to that hope that things can be better, that things can be different, and one day they will be. And that's one of the things Matt shares with in the book about our marriage, is he said it wasn't one thing that changed my mind and wanted to, you know, give our marriage a go again. It was little things that I did to show him every day that I was trying. It was tickling the kids, you know, when he walks through, when he comes home from work. It's making dinner. It's, you know, I gained 40 pounds during my drinking.
Mm-hmm.
I'm 5'8", you know, 145. That's 40 pounds on that is a big for
right.
me,
right.
you know? So he's always laughing at me that I share my real weight, too, because I'm like, well, I don't care. And I'm married, so.
Right, right. You won't find many women that do that, so.
Well, if I'm going to, you know, perpetuate that it's about being honest, I'm like, maybe I'm off 2 pounds, but they get the point.
Right.
he shares that, too.
Right. I want to ask you, you spoke so clearly about having this hope and being in these dark moments. What was that hope for you? Because I'm thinking of this big black room, and in the corner there's just a little like pin drop of light. I mean, did you just keep repeating that to yourself, that things will get better?
Yeah, so my mantra became living sober is the best amends, living sober is the best amends. And I would say it. And I actually read it on a sticker while I was in rehab. It said living sober is the best amends. So, I don't know why that had such a profound reaction to me, but it did. I was like, yeah, you know, that's so true. It really is so true. So I just kept saying it. It just became my mantra. So anytime I would second guess myself, and there are plenty of those moments, gosh, daily in the beginning, hourly, I would just think to myself, if I just don't drink today and prove that I can do it to myself and to my family, then things will get better. Just today. So once I had a month sober, I wanted to set little goals for myself, and I got fixated on the 5-year mark, which is kind of funny because I just got my 5-year coin. So my husband Matt looks at me and he's like, "All right, so what's the next goal?"
Right.
I'm like, 5 more years. But I didn't want to get wrapped too much up in like never. I can't ever have another drink again, like ever. Like, that was way too much for me. So I wanted to try a month, and then I don't know why I just got fixated. I was 5 years. That was my goal. So my new goal is 10 years. And it worked for me. Not to say that times weren't hard, and not to say that, you know, they're still not, because life happens. It's life goes on, and things happen in life whether we want to or not. You know, I just lost my job recently. And in the book, I talk about when I lost my job working as a community relations representative, and I lost my job. And instead of focusing all of my positive energy and thoughts and putting it out to the universe that I was ready to accept the job, I sat on a bar stool. I cast my 401k out behind my husband's back, opened up a separate banking account, and blew through $7,000.
Wow.
On booze. Behind his back.
On booze.
Knowing that.
Wow.
Knowing that we bought a house on two incomes, now we're down to one, a teacher's salary. Knowing he was struggling paying the bills, paying the electric, putting food on the table, my addiction didn't care because poor me. Poor me. Look, I lost my job. Poor me. Not. You lost your job because you're a boozer in the afternoons,
right,
on your lunch break when you should be working. You know, any normal thinking, rational person would be like, no, not poor you, Amy. Damn you. Like, what are you doing? No. So, I mean, the man's a saint. What can I say?
No, you guys have been through quite a bit. I mean, and that comes out in the book. And the book that we're referring to is you actually co-wrote with your husband, called From
yeah.
This Day Forward, A Love Story of Faith, Love, and Forgiveness.
Faith, hope, and forgiveness, yes.
Faith, hope, and forgiveness.
And it's interesting because it's his side, my side. So
right.
It goes, it's alternating chapters, and we talk about, you know, situations, and it's, I say it from the alcoholic's mind, what I was thinking, how I was feeling, and all the rage and anger and fear and you know, shallowness that comes along with being an addict, along with the hurt and the pain and the suffering that comes along with it. And then it goes to, all right, now Matt's going to tell you his version of that story and why that happened, with all of those same emotions attached to, you know, the non-alcoholic partner in a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And what each of us go through and how we're feeling. So it's pretty interesting.
Yep.
We've gotten a lot of good reviews on it, and I'm really proud of it. It's very, very honest.
I know, for the two of you to do it together and for your husband to be up for that.
Because
he could just as easily say, no, I want to put that chapter behind us. I don't want people to know, which can happen in families. Guilt, shame is also very common with the family members.
Mm-hmm.
But no, he stepped up and he said, let's do this.
Well, he and I both, we want to fight this stigma on alcoholism and what it looks like. And I remember being in Bowling Green after the accident was my second rehab. And not a lot of people know that. Because the first time I went, I was looking around the rooms like, oh, no, no. This isn't going to work. This is no. You people, there's something wrong with you people. There's nothing wrong with me. No. Like, don't touch me. Don't talk to me. Bye. Like, that's how I wasn't ready to receive anything. I was too busy ignoring and putting myself on this pedestal and not being just authentic and honest. Bowling Green, after the accident, was the first time that I could see myself in the other addicts. You know, the man sitting next to me with piercings and tattoos all over him, and how he was hurting because he injured his back 10 years ago, got on Oxycontins for pain, and then just got addicted to them. And now here he is. Or I'm looking across the room at the war veteran who took two tours of duty, and, you know, only to come home, and now he's fighting his own personal war in his mind with PTSD. I mean, I'm looking at the young girl sitting next to me who is addicted to heroin because her boyfriend committed suicide and she didn't know what else to do. She didn't know how to, you know, cope with those feelings. And eventually, as each person in this room is sharing their stories, I'm finding a common denominator in all of it, and all of it is drugs and alcohol. So it doesn't really matter what brought us all in that room. Mm-hmm. We were all there for the same reason. Our paths may have been different, but it was all the same reason. So I just, it was in Bowling Green that I was like, you know, I gotta stop, take the exteriors out of it. And internally, we're all hurting, and we're all using the same method to numb. So it was really interesting. And I wrote about that in the book, too, about how I had, like, this aha moment. And I thought, no way. Like, what does addiction look like? So Matt and I, you know, really joined forces. And when we go and we speak now, I can't tell you how many people will say, all right, which one of us is the addict? If nobody knows us and nobody's seen anything, no Oprah, no, don't know anything about the book, I can't tell you how many times people look at Matt and be like, oh, you. Why? Because he's a guy?
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't look like I'm an addict? And I'm like, no, it's me. I mean, even our conversation, Dawn, before we hit record, was you've read the passage in the book where I'm screaming F you to all my husband's coworkers, and you're like, no, I can't picture you doing that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, it's crazy because you, on the internet, your picture looks one way, and then I read the book, and you're screaming F you out of your car, your husband's coworkers, and I really was like, this isn't the same woman. And even as you're speaking now, the woman that you were when you were in the throes of your addiction and the woman that you are now, it's like I'm talking to two separate people.
Absolutely, you are. And I always caution, you know, new acquaintances that I meet, that like when I recently joined this new workout group at the mm-hmm. Y, and the one woman was like, I know you. And long story short, she put two and two together, and she goes, oh, I got to get your book. And I went, yeah, you know what, could you just please keep in mind that was 5+ years ago when all of that was going on. And you know, she kind of giggled, but she came to me like 2 weeks later. She's like, I read your book in one day. Oh my God, I never would have guessed it. You? And then she's like, in the middle of, you know, body pump, she's like, and when you did this, and when you said that, and I'm like, oh, Lord. She's like,
you're
I
like,
could
not
totally
now.
Relate. And then, you know, we touch on infidelity in the book. You know, Matt, you know, has had his indiscretions, and we talk about as a couple how we process that and why that came up. Because his wife was 40 pounds overweight, you know, jobless, wrecking herself, wreaking havoc all over her home, and I was just content to lay in bed, get drunk, pass out, wake up, drink. Like, life was literally passing me by.
Right. I mean,
so
he
we talk about that.
That he wasn't attracted to anymore.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
He literally just said that to your face.
Oh, my gosh. I'll never forget that day. Yeah. We were having an argument, and the argument really started over I was fishing for compliments. Because I was feeling insecure, you know, and I needed, my ego needed, you know, some validation that I was still pretty and I wasn't making the wrong decisions, and it was, you know, stroking me to be like, well, get him to say everything's going to be okay, and that'll validate your drinking for you. But that's not what he did. You know, he said, I'm not attracted to you anymore.
Mm.
And I was like, it was like a punch in the face.
Mm-hmm.
You're stunned. Have you ever been punched in the face? I mean, I have. It's like, did that hurt? I don't know if that hurt. Yeah, that hurt.
Right.
You
right.
know?
Right.
Like numb for a little bit. You're like, whoa, you're in shock. And then, you know, the throbbing starts to come and the heat starts to come. And you're like, oh, yeah, that's a punch in the face. All right. That's how it felt. And I remember I ran upstairs and I was just sobbing. And part of me was like, do I blame him? Do I blame him? Like, my heart and my soul knew what this man was saying was true. But my mm-hmm. ego and my addiction were saying, screw him. Next. Like, what's
right.
he know?
Right.
So it was this constant tug of war inside of me that was just relentless.
Mm-hmm.
As anybody, any addict will tell you. We've all been through it.
Right. I mean, your story is certainly one of hope, and just everything that you've been through can give other people the courage and the hope, and even the family members, that things can change, that things can get better.
Oh, yeah. I mean, my in-laws didn't speak to me for a year.
Wow.
A year. And you know what? I had to stop taking it so personal. That's my biggest advice to people who are like, who want their resentments. They want their resentments more than they want their sobriety. You have got to let it go. And you're not. I'm not letting it go saying them ignoring me. Like, literally, when I walked into a room, they nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing. I had to let that go because that's how they process their way and I process my way. And I had to prove to, you know, I'm a mother. Okay? So I had to prove to my mother-in-law that I wasn't going to hurt her son anymore. And how could I take that away from her? Because if the situation was reversed, and let's say my son, God forbid, marries an alcoholic, and there has to be some compassion there.
Right.
As a mother. So that's my number one thing that I tell people is you need to want your sobriety more than you want to hold on to resentments.
You know what amazes me is that you talk about in the book how you had trauma early in your life, and then you have this period of your life where things got really, really bad. Your marriage is falling apart. You get in this accident. I mean, it's just unbelievable that mentally you were able to hold it together, and it's then when you could no longer use the alcohol to numb yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like when I hate to say this, it was like when you needed it the most. You had to let it go.
Absolutely. But, you know, isn't that just how divine mercy works?
Mm.
You know, when you think you can't live without something, I turn to my faith and I realize that I can, because I can hold on to something else. It's a shift in perception. And, you know, once I started viewing the accident and my addiction as a bad thing and started viewing it as a positive thing, something that was intended and its main purpose was to put me on the right track, my life has never been better. See, when people, in my opinion, when I stopped feeling sorry for myself and poor Amy, she's an alcoholic and she can never have a drink again and look what she did and everybody's going to hate her and everybody's talking about her and everybody's saying she's a bad mother and a piece of crap. Once I stopped viewing all of that as negative and started saying to myself, how lucky are you that you got this wake-up call? Nobody had to die. Everybody's alive. Everybody's moving forward. And you get to as well, Amy. That's living in God's grace. And that is when I started to realize the experiences. And what Henry Ford was that the experiences being the supreme value. My experience, having had that awakening with that accident, it has totally shifted my mindset. You know, my husband and I couldn't be more in love, and we focus on our family first. We focus on my sobriety, and my family comes first. Whereas before, it was the party. My social calendar came first. Where was I drinking at? Who was I drinking with? You know, we have our third child, Hadley. Hadley will never know what it's like to be placed in front of a TV set for 6 hours a night so mommy can be in downstairs in the basement drinking with her friends. She'll never know that. She'll never know what it's like to have the television as a babysitter. My older two do.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very open with both Gavin and Madison on alcoholism. My father being an alcoholic, the heredity of that, which he's 3 years sober now, so congratulations to him.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. And we talk about how the warning signs that I missed. We talk about their feelings, their confusion, and I'm very open and honest with them. I don't ever want them to come to me and feel ashamed of me, that I don't want them to carry that burden, that it's my mother's an alcoholic, let's not talk about it. No, talk about it. Talk about it. I don't care. I'm an alcoholic. My name is Amy, and I'm an alcoholic. I mean, literally, people, like, we're out at restaurants or, like, at a gathering sometimes or a restaurant sometime, and someone's like, oh, come on, you want a drink? No, no, I don't want a drink. You know, you politely, no, I'm good. Oh, come on, just one shot. No, I'm an alcoholic. And they're just,
right,
like, if you're at a headlight. And at first, my husband would be like, do you have to say that? I'm like, yes.
Yes,
well, I'm
do.
I'm not ashamed of it. I need them to stop forcing booze in front of my face, you know?
Right.
So I'm very blunt and I'm very open. And, I mean, obviously I wrote a book about it and I went on the Oprah Winfrey Show, so clearly I don't have a problem.
Right.
Telling people.
Wow.
But the main point to all of that is, you know, my whole intention is I need other women, and I say women because that's just who I focused on when I was, you know, early in recovery, is to know that I've been there too. And I know exactly that lost, empty, hopeless feeling that comes with trying to get sober, trying to navigate through a sober life. I've been there. So I'm not afraid to hold my hand up and be like, yeah, I'm not fine. Everything's not fine. Mm-hmm. I still yell at my husband. We still get in fights. I still scream at my kids, you know?
Right.
I still curse.
Hopefully not
in front
out
of
the
them.
Window with a
yeah.
red cup in your hand, but you know you could still you know get angry, but just not that way.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not screaming FUs anymore. True, but
I mean it's funny. You know, it's funny because it's shocking because you don't expect. You know, it's what we went back to saying before is that when you see you, your picture, you don't expect that to come out of your mouth, but that's what makes it so shocking. Wow.
It does. I mean, addiction will take you to some dark, dark corners, man. It's just the nature of the beast. And you just have to be willing. I just needed to be willing just for that day to hold on to that little bit of hope that this is not going to be the end of me. This is not how my life is going to end up. So then in 5 years, I graduated with my master's degree. I published a book with my husband. We had another baby.
Wow.
I went on the Oprah Winfrey Show. We're writing our second book now.
Whoa.
Oh, yeah. Like, we just bought another house. And this is not to impress anyone, but it's to impress upon you that things can change. Absolutely. If you would have told me 6 years ago, as I'm laying drunk in my own puke, Amy, you're going to do this, 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 and this, and this, I would have said, where did you buy what you're smoking, and can I have some?
Right, exactly.
You know
wow.
what I mean?
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I'm amazed at when you have the will to change your life and the determination and the fortitude to follow through with what you say you're going to do. I'm not going to drink today. Just follow through with that. And then I just started replacing, well, this would be the time I would have, you know, it's 5 o'clock somewhere, beer, like 10 a.m.
Right.
I picked up a book. You know, I started writing. I just made sure I followed through. And if I can do it, anybody can do it. Anybody can.
I think your middle name should be Inspiration. Amy Inspiration Baumgardner.
Thanks. Oh, God, that's like, I love hearing you say that because that's my whole point. That's the whole point to any of this is I encourage women to go on my website and it says contact me and tell me your story. I respond to everybody. I read them all and I will respond. And just share your story with me so I can just, that's what we're here for, sounding boards.
Right.
You know, everybody wants to know how the other person did it. We all
exactly.
do. We all sit and wonder, like, how did they do it? I remember listening, I was a month sober, and the woman had 20 years, and I'm like, what the F? Like, how in the world is that? How is that possible?
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to hear. And you know what I wanted to hear? I wanted to hear her dark and dirty laundry.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what I could relate to. I wanted to hear how you were worse than me, because that gave me hope. Well, I'm not that bad.
Right.
Because
is that
sounds...
Yeah.
That's what worked for me. So when I was newly sober and I couldn't find any stories worse than mine, I thought, some woman is going to want to hear this. Put her two kids in the car and hit a tree willingly, knowingly. Somebody's going to need to hear that.
Mm-hmm.
So then that's what prompted me to write the book.
Wow. Well, we are coming. We are way over our 30-minute mark, by the way. Yeah, I'm fine with it. I just, you know, I should have said something, but I'm like, my jaw's dropped as you speak because everything is just so good. But I wanted to give you a chance as we wrap up to tell us where we can find out about the book, your website, all that good stuff.
Yes. So you can go Barnes & Noble, Amazon, you know, all Books A Million, all the places have it. And it is From This Day Forward, A Love Story of Faith, Hope, and Forgiveness. And you can go on our website as well, and that is mattandamyb.com. And that's all one word, mattandamyb.com. You could also follow me on Twitter at @abombamy. And if you contact me, I respond to everybody.
Well, you definitely have the inspiration part down.
Thank you.
We just need to get you the right megaphone. I mean, you were on Oprah, so come on. You probably reached a lot of people doing that, right? Oh, my goodness.
I hope so. Yeah, I hope so, for sure.
I mean, I'm sure when you were down in your deepest, darkest, I mean, you just said this. If somebody came up to you and said, you're going to be on Oprah someday, you would be like, excuse me?
I would have laughed.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, God has a way of just working it out for you if you just believe, have the faith in yourself to just say, this can be done and it will be done. You just got to believe that you deserve a second chance.
Mm.
And then don't waste it. I'm not wasting this second chance.
Right.
So the next book, Matt and I, we're doing a On the Rocks, Couples Guide to Recovery. And
okay.
It's all about your first year
title.
Sober. Yeah, it's all about the first year sober and, like, all the things that I never knew. I mean, even my sponsor couldn't prepare me for that I was going to, you know, that Matt and I were going to be going through. And it's, you know, not as, it's a little bit more comedic. It's not as drama-filled. Mm-hmm. It's just a fun little antics and things that, you know, a sober couple will go through. So we're excited.
Wow. Yeah. Well, you'll have to get in touch, and when you have it out,
sure,
and we'll bring you back, and we'll talk about that, because I'm sure it'll be another great conversation. Because I'm telling you, are you from Philadelphia? You're from Philadelphia, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm from Philadelphia too, and I can tell you don't have a really, really strong Philadelphia accent, but certain words I picked out when you were talking, I was like, she's got to be from Philly.
Yeah.
Where in?
Well, now we live in Oxford, so it's like 50 minutes outside of Philly.
Okay.
But my mom and dad, born and raised, so they have their little thick accents.
Yeah. Water and salad.
Water. Yeah, my God, water. Can you say that? Because my kids are always like, Mom, do you want water or water? I'm like, Do you want a cherry or a cherry?
Yeah. Phone.
Funny.
Say phone, like phone. Instead of phone, it's phone.
Yeah.
Philly accents.
It's been a pleasure talking with you.
Yes, you too.
And let me know, when you finish the book, let me know how you enjoyed it.
Yeah, absolutely. And definitely get in touch when your second book, On the Rocks, comes out, when you've got that all settled, because we'll come back on to talk about that one.
I sure will.
All right. You have a great day, Amy. Thank you.
Thanks so much. Bye.
All right. Bye-bye. Okay. So, again, the book that Amy and her husband co-wrote, From This Day Forward, A Love Story of Faith, Hope, and Forgiveness, is out now. You can go to Barnes & Noble, all those online sites, and get your copy of that. Website, mattandamyb.com. And in the upcoming, probably close future, they have another book coming out called On the Rocks, about Amy's first year in recovery and how that impacted her relationship with her husband. It's actually a really interesting point of view, because I've never heard of a couple writing a book like that together. That will be an interesting one. All right, so for more information on Growing Up Chaotic, you can visit the blog at growingupchaotic.com, and we can also connect on Facebook at facebook.com/growingupchaotic and on Twitter at growingupchaotic. And again, for Twitter,
That's spelled GRWNGUPCHAOTIC. Thanks for listening, and thanks to Amy Baumgardner for making this show not only possible, but incredibly inspirational. Until next time.